Good afternoon, everyone. I am calling the April 14th, 2023 meeting of the Arizona Board of Occupational Therapy Examiners to order at precisely 1:30 p.m. Our next item of business is a roll call.
Christopher Daly.
Present.
Charlene Marbs.
Present.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am calling the April 14th, 2023 meeting of the Arizona Board of Occupational Therapy Examiners to order at precisely 1:30 p.m. Our next item of business is a roll call.
Christopher Daly.
Present.
Charlene Marbs.
Present.
Barbara Paulson.
Present.
Dr. McAllister.
Present.
Shana Ganatra.
Present.
Mark Harris.
Present.
And myself, Vicki Garola.
Considering that we have established quorum with all board members present today, our next item of business is agenda item 3, declaration of conflicts of interest. Do any board members have anything to declare?
This is Charlene Marbs. I have none.
This is Barbara Paulson. I have none.
Quentin McAllister, I do not.
And Chris Daly, I have none. Considering there are no conflicts to discuss, the next item of business is agenda item 4, approval of minutes. 4-1, regular session meeting minutes of March 10, 2023 meeting. The meeting minutes have been previously distributed. Are there any corrections to the March 10th, 2023 meetings or anything to discuss? Considering I hear no corrections, I move to adopt the March 10th, 2023 meeting minutes as distributed.
I'll second the motion, Quentin McAllister.
It has been moved and seconded that the March 10th, 2023 meeting minutes are approved as distributed. All in favor?
Chris Daly.
Aye.
Charlene Marbs.
Aye.
Barbara Paulson.
Aye.
Quentin McAllister.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Our next item of business is agenda item 5, review and consider future board meeting schedule. Items A, B, and C, May 12th, June 9th, and July 14th, 2023. Do any members of the board have any scheduling conflicts at this time?
Can you see my hand?
Yeah.
I love this new button. Mr. Chair, at this time, I cannot say with confidence that I will be attending the June 9th meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Paulson.
I am looking at my dates now because I have some things coming up in June and July. June is fine. I don't know the dates off the top of my head, sorry. But I won't be available for the July.
And the June 9th meeting, I'm not 100% sure yet. I'm iffy. Kind of like Ms. Paulson on that one.
So June 9th may need to be rescheduled considering we would not have quorum with two members absent.
Mr. Daly, we will do that.
Okay. Any other discussion pertaining to future meeting dates at this time?
It would probably need to be moved up because it just barely misses my June, if that's possible.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take a look. Thank you, Dr. Q.
Oh, did you say moved up in June?
Yeah. Yeah. So probably the first Friday because it's on the 8th, right? Was that?
It's June 2nd?
Second, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Barbara Paulson. I can say with 100% confidence, I will not be able to attend that. I will be out of the country. And as much as I enjoy everyone's company, I'm not.
This is Charlene Marbs. I should be present June 2nd.
And Chris Daly, June 2nd would be fine for me. Ms. Ganatra, do you require any additional information here?
I do not believe so, Mr. Daly. I think we can adjust the times and based on the information provided. Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Our next item of business is agenda item 6, review, consideration, and possible action, complaints, investigations, and compliance. First, we have item 6A, initial review of complaint 1 for Natalie Garland. And in brief summary, Ms. Garland submitted a July 26, 2020 renew application where she self-disclosed 2 misdemeanor DUI charges. Following board review of charges and the status of court-mandated requirements, Ms. Garland entered into a consent agreement signed and dated on March 4th, 2021, that included 2 years of probation, which included counseling with the licensed behavioral health provider, completion of court-mandated alcohol-related classes, and the provision of quarterly progress updates to the board, all of which has been completed from my review of that file. Although the only thing I did see noted were 2 late quarterly progress updates.
Yeah. Were those due because the provider was late, or?
Ms. Marbs, I was just going to ask that. Was that, yes, of her submitting or staff not providing it to the board? Oh, Natalie is on. The name is different. I apologize.
Yeah, it's me. I got married, so last name is Rizzo.
Now.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, if Mr. Michael, the therapist, was late with those. Those were his to turn in, and I believe they were a week or a few weeks late. But he did get them in.
Is there any additional questions or discussion here?
So, Mr. Chair, just a clarification. I don't have the document in front of me, but was the only pending item the probation?
Correct. So as far as I could ascertain, the only pending item was the probation, okay, which would have been completed as of March 4th, 2023.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair. She submitted all documentation and was in compliance months before. And we did place this on, February or March agenda, but it was too soon.
Okay.
So we were asked to put it back on April's agenda.
But it is a matter of, Ms. Marbs.
So no, go ahead.
It is a matter of completion, and the board doesn't have to have a discussion or any kind of vote on probation. It has been completed in time, right?
Yeah, my understanding is we would just need to move to terminate the probation, if I am correct. I may not be, though.
Mr. Harris?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
For the item at hand, are we moving at this point to terminate the probation period, considering that it has been satisfactorily completed?
That is correct, yes. You would be finding that there's nothing left to do and not reinstating, but returning her license to, unrestricted status.
Okay.
Otherwise, she would just complete the probationary period
That is correct. Yeah. Okay. But there's no terms left.
Do we have a motion?
I move that the board return Ms. Rizzo's license to an unrestricted status on successful completion of all the activities in her consent agreement.
Chris Daly, I second the motion. It has been moved and seconded that we return Ms. Garland's or Ms. Rizzo's occupational therapy license to unrestricted status. All in favor?
Christopher Daly?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
Barbara Polson?
Aye.
Clint McAllister?
I do have one question before I vote. Have we went through the process for name changing for the license and...
Yes, I have. My current license now is Rizzo with you guys. Yeah.
Yes, Mr. McAllister.
Ms. Igrola, that's correct.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I vote aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much, Ms. Rizzo.
Thank you all so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Bye.
Moving on to agenda item 6A2, matter of Alicia Stewart. And just in a quick summary, at the March 2023 OT board meeting, we reviewed a self-disclosure received from Ms. Stewart regarding the falsification of clinical documentation in order to expedite patient hospital discharges for several patients, which ultimately led to the termination of her employment. Ms. Stewart provided detailed written and verbal explanations of the circumstances surrounding the global incident from her perspective. Although during discussions, it was brought to the board's attention that a formal complaint was pending regarding this matter, and it was decided that it would be best to continue this agenda item at our meeting here today to allow for board review of formal complaint investigations. In brief summary regarding the formal complaint, it was reported that Ms. Stewart documented and billed for multiple inpatient OT consults and OT evaluations in the hospital medical record that were not actually completed between the dates of November 2nd and November 11th, 2022. Following completion of hospital internal investigations, Ms. Stewart was ultimately terminated on November 18th, 2022, on the grounds of falsification of hospital records, misconduct, and violations of false claims statutes. A number of related clinical documents totaling 44 files were also provided for the board's review. Ms. Stewart did provide additional written details in response to the formal complaint brought against her, in brief pertaining to excessive workload demands and utilization of a consultation process that was implemented in the hospital. I'm sure there will be a number of questions for both Ms. Stewart as well as the complainants, but at this time I wanted to first provide an opportunity for Ms. Stewart to provide any additional context or details that should be taken into consideration pertaining to this matter, and then hear from the complainants. Ms. Stewart, would you like to make a statement?
Thank you for having me here today. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. At this time, I do believe that I've provided the information that I had available, and I would be happy to answer any further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart. And I do see the complainants are in attendance at the meeting. Is there a statement or additional information that would like to be provided to the board at this time regarding the complaints? And if you are talking, you are muted.
I believe they may have to unmute themselves from the computer, or I'm not sure. It looks like they run a phone.
If you can try rejoining back in, if that's possible, that might be a way to unmute.
It may still stay. Well, yeah.
Okay, thank you. So comment has been made that all documents have been submitted, and the complainants are also happy to answer any questions. Are there questions from members of the board at this time? They will log off and back on again.
Okay.
And we will pause.
It still shows muted.
There's also a dial by phone option for audio and speak, if that might be easier.
In respect of your time, if there's any questions that would like to be directed at me while I have my microphone on, I'd be more than happy to answer.
The only thing I would ask is that we pause any discussion related to this case until all parties are present.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Mr. Daly, if you wanted to, we could do a brief recess while we're waiting for that. Might be the most.
Yeah. Or we can call another case.
Oh, it sounds like.
Can you guys hear us now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We're called in on the phone line and it was muted. So we apologize for that.
Thank you so much. And I did have a couple of questions for the complainants, but I don't want to jump ahead of any board members who are hoping to ask.
Nope. Go ahead.
All right. Chris Daly here. Just curious, the 44 files that were submitted with the complaint, was each one of those reflective of inappropriate documentation or false documentation? Were there 44 incidents of false clinical documentation?
Those 44 instances were what we could actually prove, and during the investigation review with Ali to determine that those had actually met the investigation in regards to the incorrect or inappropriate documentation and filling. So what we did as a part of that, we pulled the staff list, sat down with her, and went through each of those for her to identify on there. We did our best with video review to determine which rooms had gone in and out of, but we used her self-reporting to determine that those were the cases.
Thank you. So specifically, looking at the lengthy evaluation documents that were provided, were those completely fabricated?
From Allie's statement, correct, yes.
Thank you.
We also determined during several of those evaluations or consults that there was no video evidence that she had entered or exited the department at the time those consults or evals were to be completed.
Thank you very much. And just one follow-up. Would you mind clarifying for us the difference between the OT consult and an OT evaluation and what that process is?
This is Director of Rehab, and yes, in the consult, it was something we were utilizing for when a patient was independent and moving about or refused, and the chart review was already done. So consult was, we call it eyes on, not hands on, and that consult was supposed to be documenting conversations with that patient and or with the nursing, and that documentation is much, I'm not sure what was submitted, but it does not allow for any charging, just to clarify that point. But it does allow for us to document in the chart that the therapist was at least interviewing the patient or at least reviewing and saying that that patient was or did not need OT.
And is it fair to say that would just be a tool to aid in the discharge planning for patients?
It was a tool to aid in, one, discharge planning, yes. It was also a tool to aid in helping with staffing gaps that we were having at the time while we were pending additional travelers coming on. We were also working with the long-term care facilities at the time to have them do the evaluations at the time of patient arrival.
Thank you very much.
I have a question of sorts. I think I don't have the specific information in front of me, but Ms. Stewart disclosed that she spoke with maybe two or three of the staff there about her caseload and time and ability to carry out her duties. Could you share anything if she came to you about what the guidance was and how to manage her load and time and do a professional, authentic job?
Absolutely. So I am actually one of the people that she came and spoke with, and we sat down and made a list of barriers and that she was facing, things that were hindering completing cases, a lot of those around staffing gaps, making sure we had right caseloads, working how we could do handoffs with teammates, making sure we're balancing caseloads. We were looking at equipment. We even went down to tracing pathways through the hospital. You know, some of what she needed wasn't, you know, we're a four-story facility. Some of what she needed was maybe on the third floor when she was trying to get down to the first floor. So how we could make things easier for her and kind of take some of the deficiencies in regards to having to do 12 steps to get something done because she doesn't have the right tools versus just getting the task done with the right tools. So that was a little bit about what we looked at. That conversation happened maybe a week or 2 weeks before this investigation opened up. So we were really looking at how to give her the tools that she needed to, and looking at her caseload So that was my part of it. And then, you know, we kind of segued into a part of this investigation while I was still working with her to make sure that she was getting the resources. Does anybody else have anything to say about any conversations, any of that? I'm Monica, the director here. We have, Allie and I had spoken in the months preceding this. We were having challenges getting the help that we wanted on the floor. I will say we've asked her to condition to her daily schedule on these Fridays. She was on call every Saturday and Sunday for months, which other than when we could get some coverage and get some the travelers to take that off of her, I know that that was stressful. I know that was very stressful. It was a lot to ask. And I will say that the daily caseload at times was probably enough for two OTs. So what we tried to do was look at insurances and make sure that PT communication, that would eliminate the need for Allie to go in. For Medicare, so the nursing assistant would be versus if we needed somebody to see if we didn't follow something.
I'm sorry. Could you speak up a little louder? I could not hear that the last part of what you were saying.
Sure. Sorry, she's a little far away from the phone. But what she said is we looked at how we could remove caseload by having, help from PT side. So PT was able to help and see that and make that determination that would definitely help take some of that caseload off of Allie. To kind of support getting to a normal caseload. She mentioned that oftentimes for a very long time, Allie was taking calls on the weekend along with completing a Monday through Friday schedule, which is a lot for any person. And that's something that Allie and I identified when she sat down with me as well. And, you know, that's unsustainable for people to work that often. And so we definitely looked at how we can get help from travelers. We reached out to sister hospitals. We were able to get some help down from the sister hospital for PT. I'm so sorry. I thought that was for OT. So we have a CODA. Oh, we had a CODA come in. And so we were trying to get our staffing up. Yes. Allie was definitely working on sustainable hours, which was identified during our.
Well, thank you for that. Ms. Stewart, do you have anything that you would like to add to those comments or?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you to everyone from the hospital for being present today and for your information. I certainly appreciated every part of that process in which you met with me to speak on the matters, the conditions of the hospital. And I included this in my written letter as well, but I'm sure for anyone who's worked inpatient at a hospital, high senses and feelings of stress are not uncommon. And I do acknowledge that I, despite taking many measures to take care of my mental health during that time frame, probably could have done better. And I guess I wanted to add the context of, you know, the time frame over which I had been feeling high levels of stress and burnout during that position. It was very much my goal to be able to complete the two-year contract that I'd signed on to at the hospital. I had been meeting with Monica for a long time. I'm sure she was very sick of me talking about it, to be honest, but we'd had many conversations about staffing concerns, and I know that that was the primary issue of identification that we were able to find during meetings with risk management as well, which I certainly appreciated all of the efforts. I intend no disrespect whatsoever. I do think with rural hospitals, staffing is usually a concern, and it was a matter that brought me to want to be a part of this environment so that I could help bring more occupational therapy to the culture of the hospital. As a new graduate, I will say I was entirely unprepared for taking that on all on my own, especially without any mentorship. And I did want to speak to the first points that they brought up as well. the first questions that they answered that regarding consultation, I definitely could have asked more questions. I was guided kind of as Monica was discussing, but it did feel slightly different at times, the model of consultation that I was guided to behave within was essentially if a patient was independent or required home health services from physical therapy to write a consultation note that was not a billed service because it wasn't a service, but the note would go in to help facilitate discharge. Where the challenges came in the interim before my termination from the hospital was during several evaluations that needed to be completed because, and this is not new information to anyone, but the skilled nursing facilities in our area and the acute rehab facilities require a full consultation in order for patient discharge to occur. And of course, that is how the hospital works and case management requires that information to facilitate that process. I take full accountability for my actions leading up to those patient discharges, which I was working to expedite because I had several instances of holding up patient discharges for at least a day of a time in which they weren't able to get the services that they need and were being billed and provided additional days at the hospital. And so while I don't condone any of my behaviors, I do believe they were coming from a benevolent place. And I know now the mistakes that I've made. And as someone that has not been in the field out of school very long, I do still have hopes for what I might be able to provide. And I know that what I did was not in alignment with the professional that I want to be or the professional behaviors that this hospital deserved. And I'm deeply sorry. I wanted to say that now that I'm in a place to speak with everyone that's here in the room and here on the board. And I thank you all for your time today and your consideration of our many, many months that it's been until this meeting. So thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Ms. Stewart. At this time, I would ask that we move to executive session.
For legal advice?
For legal advice. I always leave that part off. Yes, for legal advice.
Ms. Daly, I second the motion. All in favor?
Sorry, Chris Daly.
Aye.
Charlie Marbs.
Aye.
Barbara Paulson.
Aye.
Dr. McAllister.
Aye.
Oh. Excuse me. Motion passed unanimously.
And this is Shayna. I would just remind that all board members and board staff will be moving to the executive session room and all participants here can stay. Just please no side conversations as we're away. Thank you.
All right. We have returned to open session at 2:19 p.m. Chris Daly, would members of the board be open to having a discussion pertaining to a consent agreement?
Yes.
Barbara Paulson, I would.
So just to start things off here, we're looking at findings of facts pertaining to violations of Arizona Revised Statutes 10Q, 10U, and 10X. 10Q being falsely claiming to have performed professional service, billing for a service not rendered, or charging or collecting an excessive fee for services not performed. You violating any federal law, state law, rule, or regulation directly related to the practice of occupational therapy, and X, falsifying client documents or reports.
Mr. Daly, I believe we had a question for Sierra, the facility. Are you all, in fact, billing to Medicare?
We are compliant with Medicare, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marbs.
That would confirm you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I would just like to make a comment on while Ms. Stewart had significant professional concerns regarding procedures and patient care, it is a fact that she self-disclosed that she had falsified documentation, and the number of incidents of this was pretty significant. So
just to give some scope for the other board members, me being on the board the longest, this is the first time I've seen this amount of fraudulent billing that was valid, that was confirmed. So we would have to ask Vicky if, or Miss Eagle, excuse me, if she's seen anything in her time. She's the only other person that's been around longer than me.
In my 19 years, I have not seen it.
It's a exceptional amount.
Yes.
Yeah. And I would like to make a comment that, while I appreciate Ms. Stewart coming forward and self-disclosing, it is troublesome that the work schedule that was described for her being on call on the weekends and then working Monday through Friday, being new, well, it doesn't matter, new or not, that is an extremely daunting work schedule for anyone, and it doesn't excuse her behavior, and yet at the same time it seems to be a contributing factor for breakdown in behavior and in the system and in her work environment, that just creates a harsh work environment for anyone.
And Chris Daly, just a quick question for the complainants. Was this reflective of any type of widespread organizational issue, or was this strictly an isolated incident?
At this time, this was isolated to one area.
And how was the matter brought to your attention in the first place?
There had been a report, an internal report, anonymously placed through our internal, through our events reporting system about a concern where another therapist had entered a chart where they were supposed to be documenting their assessment. And when they went in there, they recognized that assessment had already been documented by Allie. Initially, we thought that this was maybe a patient mix-up, and as we looked into this more and identified more cases, spoke with therapists, including Allie herself, we identified that this was much more than that.
Thank you.
What's the once we started pulling the patient lists that were assigned to Ali, we then started reviewing video footage for the documented times of when the Ali entered the patient room and when she exited, and they did not match. So then we expanded to just seeing if there was any visible footage of going into the department at all, and discovered that in many cases she had not even been in the department. So it wasn't just the timing, it just didn't happen.
Thank you.
So just to get an understanding of the scope of the caseload, what would the daily schedule look like in like treatment sessions versus evaluations, or what kind of caseload was she carrying? Like how many patients?
One of the days there was 9 patients. I think there, most of them were evals, but there were a few consults. Several in the ED, I believe we looked at 5 or 6 in that were supposed to be in the ED, and many of those were not done. Other days could be 12, or even, I think 12 was the max that we saw as far as how many patients in that 8-hour period that we looked at the time.
And how many minutes? We're not talking about 9 evals, correct, or 12 evals. We're talking about a combination of treatment evals.
Standard consult was 15, right? We asked for those low complexity evaluations to be at 20 minutes. And if there's a treatment, if the therapist has a visit, then treatment during that session.
So an eval unit and then treatment minutes on top of that is that what I heard?
It could be, or it could be just the evaluation, but then the going in either later that day if it was, say, an orthopedic patient, or the next day if it was a medical. Consults are not charged, so the idea is that you're spending 5 minutes, maybe 10, maybe observing the patient, speaking with them, but you're not actually hands-on, evaluating, assessing, objective measurements, things of that nature. And if it's a chart not done because we didn't get to that patient, then it should be documented. But I will say, like, occasionally those evals that were documented, there could have been a number of other orders that have come in through the day. But there are times where we're trying to prioritize 20 patients, but we're only getting to maybe 10.
Okay. And how often was she called in on the on-call days to actually do evaluations?
I'm sorry, I don't have that with me at the moment. I would say it might have been an Ali twice a month. So we try to only keep it so it's once a weekend, the same with our orthos that are required to be seen. So again, if we could have her only come in one day out of the two. The guidelines are that we have to have somebody on call in case we did have an orthopedic patient or stroke patient.
So more or less working 6 days a week.
I should clarify. I don't believe it was every week. It might have been a lot of those every week.
Okay, thank you.
And quick question for Ms. Seward. How, in your own words, how would you describe the productivity demands of the facility?
I
I would say that from my experience with other facilities, it was less like a productivity percentage, but it was the expectation that we would be there until all of the evaluations were completed that were appropriate for that day. For example, if there was an orthopedic patient that wasn't ready to be evaluated that day, that could be pushed till the next day. But the expectation was that we would be there until all the patients were seen. I don't know if we have any information as to the number of evaluation orders that were each day. I know that our treatments differentiated, and we did have times when there was a quota able to help as well, but that person wouldn't be able to help with evaluations, of course. I will say, and this isn't to directly answer your question, but for further context, that we have met with physicians to do some education around what orders might look like in terms of ordering an evaluation because of how high the number was. And I wish that we had that information about how many orders there might have been, because I do feel that that was relevant. And just to add further context on the on-call times as well. So the expectation was calling in once in the morning and then once around like lunchtime to follow up and see if there were any patients that needed to be seen immediately to facilitate their discharge. So that was kind of the protocol there. And like Monica said, it was primarily for stroke patients or orthopedic patients who were more likely to need to discharge that weekend or go directly to an acute rehab facility, things of that nature.
And Ms. Stewart, just to clarify, you were also the individual supervising that quota?
Yes, they were seeing the patients that I was evaluating. And there was, I mean, we could probably talk more about this as well, because for most of the time there, the quota that was working was primarily downstairs and outpatient. Towards the end of my time there, we had been assessing the demands, and one of the ideas that was had, and because of just some internal shifts, we had a quota working more so on inpatient, because realistically, like, there wasn't quite enough time to get to as many treats as the patients deserved to be seen. So that was the reality there.
And you were the only licensed occupational therapist in the facility, is that correct?
We, for different time periods, it would kind of depend on the time that we're looking at, because there were times when we had travel therapists come in, and we had an outpatient OT that was working there when I started, who would float up to inpatient as well. And yeah, it would just kind of depend on the time frame that we were looking at. But there was a lot of turnover within that because of the nature of travel therapy.
And Ms. Stewart, in all reality, approximately how much time would it take to complete a full evaluation, the patient portion as well as the clinical documentation portion?
It depends on the person, but for me, I was typically doing evaluations. I was in the room for, depending on the complexity of the case, 10 to 20 minutes, and probably 15 to 20 minutes for documentation, depending on the patient. It just kind of would depend on the patient and if we were seeing them in the orthopedic program or in the emergency room, things like that.
Thank you. And Ms. Stewart, just to clarify, from your perspective, not considering the consults, how many full occupational therapy evaluations would you say you fabricated?
I'm trying to think back to that time, and I apologize for my time here. And you said not including consultations?
Just full comprehensive billable occupational therapy evaluations.
I don't have an exact number, but I don't, it was not something that I was trying to do with regularity. I know that's not helpful. I don't have an exact number, but I don't know.
Was it possibly 44?
I don't think so. I don't think so, but that just doesn't sound like anything that I would have done. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Thank you. Based upon the additional discussions, are board members comfortable with further discussing a consent agreement at this point in time?
Yes, I am.
Barbara Paulson, yes, I am.
I am as well.
As am I. Just off the cuff, I do believe it would need to be a lengthy probationary period.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I was still back on the conclusion of law. We talked about different statutes, but did we come to a consensus on those to make a motion?
Ms. Paulson, I believe that I myself had agreed that the three, forgive me, Q, U, and X, I believe, were the three that we were focused in on.
Q, U, and X?
Yes. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, and I was in agreement with those as well.
Okay, thank you. I had another number or two there, or letters, so. You know how easily confused I get sometimes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, based upon what I just heard, would it be possible to entertain a motion to first adopt findings of fact consistent with the information contained in your investigative materials and conclusions of law? And I believe the ones that were identified were ARS 3401, 10, and was it
Q, U, X. And X.
Great. If we could maybe have someone move that so that we've adopted findings of facts and conclusions of law, then we can go into discussion on what would be the appropriate kind of disciplinary action to impose in this matter.
Clarification.
Go ahead, Ms. Paulson.
Mr. Harris, is this in regard to a consent agreement?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. All right. I move that the board offer Ms. Stewart a consent agreement to include the following facts, a violation of ARS 32-3401. 10, Q, U, and X, and the conclusion, those are the finding of facts. Did I say that correctly? And the,
yeah.
And the conclusion of law is that Alicia Stewart disclosed that she falsely documented and violated those statutes.
So it's a motion that reflects both findings of facts and conclusions of law.
correct. Would you like me to say it in a more clear way?
No, I think, Shana, did you get that?
I did. So, yeah, the findings of facts was that Ms. Stewart disclosed that she had falsified documentation that violated, and here's the conclusion of law. And you got the Arizona revised statutes, correct?
I did, Ms. Paulson. Thank you.
You did. Okay.
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Chris Daly?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Quint McAllister?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
So,
at this point, we can make the recommendation for additional terms of the consent agreement. Is that correct?
Yeah, now
I think we're going to talk about discipline, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I would like to recommend, as part of discipline, continuing education hours in ethics. Dr. McAllister, Mr. Daly, are there specific courses that we need to recommend or that you can name?
This is Chris Daly. I believe with the access now with online continuing education, there would be a plethora of continuing education courses to choose from pertaining to ethics.
And one that I was thinking of in particular would have to do with, you know, Medicare billing.
This is Quinn McAllister. I was actually going to say we usually would title that as ethics and billing.
Okay.
That way it doesn't lock the person in too much of a box for the continuing education.
Okay.
And it's usually, I think, 3 to 6 hours in our less egregious cases. I think that going beyond that would probably be excessive for this particular component of the consent agreement, though.
Okay. Then I would be comfortable recommending 6 hours of ethics and billing.
In addition to the renewal requirements.
In addition, yes. Mm-hmm. And additionally offering up or for consideration 2 years of probation. And my recommendation for 2 years is based on the magnitude of the violations that were committed.
I think that we've probably given 2 years to considerably less circumstances, so.
Mm-hmm. Are you recommending more?
I would be comfortable with probation for the remainder of this licensure period plus the next 2 year licensure cycle.
And that was my question. I wanted to ask board staff, what is the status of Ms. Stewart's license right now?
I believe, let's see, she just renewed. Well, yes, the expiration of her current license was for February 7th of 2023. She does have her renewal in.
Okay.
So it'll be February 7th of 2025, this current license will expire.
So what was the additional recommendation for probation? This current cycle, which would be 2 years and an additional 2 years?
Correct.
Okay.
There are also civil penalties that we can attach to this as well.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to clarify with my board member colleagues that conditionally renewing Ms. Stewart's license will be part of the consent agreement. I mean, I know she just renewed it, but
for the next cycle.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, she's her renewal application was submitted for this renewal of 2023. We still need we are still awaiting her approval of her renewal.
Okay.
Which once approved would put her into 2025.
Okay. Considering that fact, what do board members think about probation for the just this full 2 year cycle?
I was thinking something beyond 2 years myself, so I think that you know, 3 or 4 would be, you know, a reasonable amount. Just the level of the amount of fraud and all the core values that she broke that we, you know, swear to when we get certified and licensed. It's part of me would want to suspend this license, but how beneficial that is that to anyone? I don't know. I would think that a longer probation, a significant civil penalty, I think we can form something reasonable without doing some kind of suspension, which really doesn't. I mean, I don't know. Just yeah. I think you guys understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Dr. McAllister, I'm comfortable with the. Going with 4 years probation total.
I would agree to that. I would go with that.
I would agree as well.
And what were you thinking in regards to civil penalties?
Coming from thinking that it wouldn't be too crazy to have a suspension, I think that it would have to be something significant. Mr. Harris, what are our, I can't remember. I know there's numbers and it's probably way beyond anything I'm thinking, but do you know the parameters in which we can require a civil penalty?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, you have the authority to issue civil penalties of not less than $250, no more than $10,000 for each violation. So it's quite a range. Yeah.
So, and we're essentially, through our finding of fact, we've established 3 specific incurrences. So that could be something per, or we could just do a blanket total for the cumulative. Is that correct?
That is correct, Ian.
Okay. I do think that it should be probably somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000. I understand your Miss Paulson, but if we suspend this license, they don't make any income at all. So that's kind of what I'm balancing it against. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be significant enough to say, hey, this took place and it was a huge mistake. It needs to hurt a little bit to sink in. The for myself, we got her self-report, but there was a complaint directly behind it. So I question how authentic the self-reporting is to a degree as well. I don't think that she wasn't regretful or any, but by any means, but they were real close together. So, I mean, those are my thoughts and justifications for my statements.
Just clarify that. Did I hear that correctly, that you do not feel she's regretful?
Oh, no. My apologies. Oh. No. I do think she's remorseful and regretful. Okay. Okay. Yeah, no, okay. I completely believe that she's authentic in that.
Okay.
Did you say 2,000 or 5,000?
Somewhere between 2 and 5 is what I think. Yeah.
And just members of the board, were you looking at like a 4-year period of probation?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So just, you know, if you're inclined to do something like that, one of the things that you may want to think about, given that there's really no other terms to probation once the continuing education is completed, is perhaps with respect to the civil penalty, you could maybe impose a requirement, you know, that she paid $250 every 4 months, you know, something like that, or every 3 months, you know, for the next 4 years, which will come out to approximately, you know, I can do the math, but somewhere, you know, north of 2,000, it'll be, you know, less than 5,000, but so that, you know, it's not due all at once.
Okay. And then,
you know, she paid over a period of time. And I only suggest, you know, it's just an ideal. It's entirely up to you whether you want to include it, how much you want to include it, if you want to make it due all at once. It's just just another thing to think about.
I feel like I can appreciate the payments over time that spans with the probation, the time of probation.
I agree. And I don't think we necessarily need to terminate the probation after other requirements are met, for sure. So this kind of retains the activity of the probation period.
Yeah.
So I think 250 a quarter for the 4 years that she's on probation, is that... Is that agreeable to you guys?
That sounds reasonable to me.
Yes.
Sure.
Do we need a formal motion, Mr. Harris?
Well, yes. Have we completed all the terms? Is that,
Mr. Chair, did you get everything down in writing there?
I'm pretty close, I think. I'll give it a shot here. Based upon findings of fact and conclusions of law consistent with violations of ARS 32-340110, Q, U, and X, I move that we offer Ms. Stewart a consent agreement consisting of 4 years probation, continuing education hours in ethics and billing for a total of 6 hours, to be completed within 6 months, and civil penalties in the form of $250 per quarter payable each quarter over the 4-year probationary period.
Is it possible we can include the conditional renewal of her? No, not in this.
Yeah, I'm always you know, hesitant because the licensee can always decide that they no longer want to.
Okay.
You know, and it, and if that occurs, the board would just simply note in its records that she, failed to renew while subject of a pending board order should she ever reapply in the future.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Sure.
I'll second the motion. I believe it was completed. Is that correct, Mr. Daly?
That is correct. Motion is moved and seconded. All in favor?
Chris Daly?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Dr. McAllister?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Ms. Stewart, complainants, thank you so much for your time. Ms. Stewart, you'll be receiving communication from the board regarding next steps and your willingness to consent to this consent agreement. Do you have any questions for us?
I think the questions that I have can probably be answered over email. So I just want to thank you all for the time and consideration that you've put into this process and for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next agenda item.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a quick question? This is Vicki.
Certainly.
So how is it, I'm sorry, her renewal, does she just wait to have her license renewed? Mr. Harris, this is new to me.
I apologize if I missed it. Is it pending?
Yes, sir.
She
submitted her renewal application and has been awaiting approval for this.
Yeah, I think it just gets approved with the understanding that, you know, the approval doesn't have any impact on the status of this complaint.
Okay. Thank you. And I just was asking because it was completed, but yet I thought she had to wait another month for her renewal.
Yeah, whenever it's appropriate. Yeah. And okay. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, is that something that gets done? Because she submitted her renewal application and it's awaiting approval. She's in compliance and has submitted all required documents.
And is it on the agenda though for today, or would it be for like maybe May or April or June?
She's listed under the complaints for this right. Review, but her renewal. If they don't have a board review, our executive director now approves all licenses. But because she's on, she had, as a complaint, she had her renewal on as well. But we did not list it as that.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we would just go ahead and process that unless the board, you know, is inclined to not approve it. But I don't think that's what I heard.
And I'm sorry for the confusion, Mr. Chair, but this is the first time this has happened.
Yeah, no.
I'm comfortable with that process that Mr. Harris outlined.
Yeah, I am too.
Me as well.
I am also.
Okay, so our executive director may approve the license.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct.
Thank you so much, members of the board.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item of business is agenda item 6B, review, discussion, and possible action of whether or not to open a complaint. One, we have none. Moving on to agenda item 7, review, consideration, and possible action on applications for licensure. Item 7A, initial applications. One, we have Neil Jansen, disclosure. In brief, In January of 2015, at approximately the age of 21, Mr. Jansen kicked open a Department of Motor Vehicles door while exiting the building after a series of frustrating events, inadvertently shattering the glass of the door. He was arrested and charged with destruction of federal property. The charges were ultimately dropped and expunged from his record. Mr. Jansen, are you with us today?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to expand upon that at all?
Yeah, so I've already spoken with Vicky, and basically at the time, so I had been, so like 2 months prior to that occurrence, I had been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. So that kind of point in my life, just, you know, my life kind of got turned on its head, and, you know, I had to take manual shots, and, you know, it had been a really hard time accepting that new, sorry, I'm a little lost for words. It was just a new experience, and like, I had to like completely change my lifestyle and learn a new thing. And, you know, I was really frustrated by it. And, you know, at college, you know, at that time I was like in college, and, yeah, it just was a big life-changing moment. So I actually went to the building, and so at the time my car also wasn't able to go in reverse, and I actually had to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles like 4 times because it was my fault that I wasn't bringing the proper documentation to renew my driver's license. So that was really annoying. You know, you have to find a specific parking spot, and I had to walk like farther and farther away each time. And then the last time she was like, no, you still don't have the proper documentation. And then I was just really frustrated. I was like, I got diabetes on one hand, and then I'm trying to get this driver's license, and then, you know, I'm trying to balance school and stuff. And then I unfortunately kicked the door open. It shattered. Everyone came out. The police officer said, what happened? And I told him I kicked the door, like, I will pay for it. He decided to arrest me. I spent, I think, like 4 hours incarcerated, and then I made bail, and then I found an attorney, and then they decided not to file the case, and then I paid for the door, and that was it.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jansen. Appreciate your transparency and candor regarding the matter.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Any questions from members of the board?
No.
Or do we have a motion?
Motion that we approve the license of Neil Jansen.
I'll second the motion. Quentin McAllister.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the license of Mr. Jansen. All in favor?
Chris Daly.
Aye.
Charlene Marbs.
Aye.
Barbara Paulson.
Aye.
Dr. McAllister.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Jansen. Appreciate it. We wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. And yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time. And yeah, I'm very thankful for this opportunity. Thank you guys.
Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you.
Yep, you too. Thank you, Vicky. Bye.
Bye.
Next item of business, agenda item 7A2, disclosure from Teresa Wiggum. In brief, Ms. Wiggum disclosed having her Maryland OT license placed on probation for a period of no less than 2 years for failure to renew her license and practicing OT without a license for a period of 10 weeks, which included practicing OT on 49 separate dates without a license. Ms. Wiggum signed a consent agreement dated 11-9-2021 in Maryland, which included a 2-year probationary period, and she was required to inform her employer or future employers of the probationary status of her license, as well as completion of 6 hours ethics course. No earlier than 2 years following the effective date of the consent order, Ms. Wiggum may petition to have the probationary status terminated. Is Ms. Wiggum here with us today?
She is not in Arizona at this time, and I did try to give her a call, so I'm not really sure if she's working or...
Any discussion from the board?
I don't think the, I think the only thing appropriate for us to do would be to direct her, and Mr. Harris, correct me if I'm wrong. The only thing I think we can really do in correlation to this is to have her notify us if she is out of compliance or something to that with her current consent with the other state. I think that's really the only thing that's...
And, you know, I don't think I saw the certificate of completion for the ethics course, but I could be mistaken.
So we could probably do an approval contingent upon proof of that or something to that effect.
Yeah, I don't see it in the that.
It was not with her documentation. But as to what Dr. McAllister has stated, we have done, the board has done that before. Approve a license upon receiving documentation. If you're wanting staff to verify that she did complete the ethics course.
Do we need a motion for that?
I'll make a motion to approve the license contingent upon receipt of the confirmed continuing education.
I second.
And just one quick clarification, would we be able to also make it contingent upon her informing the Arizona board if anything similar to her probationary in Maryland, informing us if anything changes?
We can ask, but there's nothing that would require her unless there's some, you know, additional action taken that would require her to disclose it.
Well, let's go with this then. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the license of, lost her name, Ms. Wiggum, contingent upon provision of satisfactory completion of 6 hours of ethics training. All in favor?
Christopher Daly?
Aye.
Charlene Marks?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Dr. McAllister?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Board staff, if I may clarify, this is Shada. We received this documentation verifying ethics courses taken, and then upon that, we issue the license. Do we bring this matter to the board for review, or is that just board staff's internal verification?
Good question. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It has been that staff has, or, you know, executive director has always approved. Once we receive the documentation, the board is requesting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That should be sufficient, in my opinion.
Agreed. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, next item of business. 7B1, matter of Madeline Stone, reinstatement. Very briefly, Ms. Stone's OTA license expired on March 9th, 2023. The renewal reinstatement application was received on March 21st, 2023. Ms. Stone provided OTA services on 4 separate dates during that time period until she realized that her license expired, and then took proactive action to get the reinstatement application in. Is Ms. Stone with us today?
Yes, hi, I'm here.
Hi, Ms. Stone. Is there anything you would like to add to that?
First and foremost, I just want to apologize and taking your time. I realized on the March 16th that my license was expired. So I had worked March 10th, March 13th, 14th, and 15th. That's 4 days. And like I said, on the 16th, I realized that my license had expired. So I had not worked since. And I took immediate action to reinstate or finish the application and to get my license.
Thank you, Ms. Stone. Any discussion from the board?
So any strategies you're going to use so you don't get in this situation again, Ms. Stone?
Yes, so this was my first time renewing my license. On February 18th, I finished my 12 credit units. So that was February 18th, and I just truly didn't understand the application process. I thought that I had finished it. Turns out I did not do it correctly. So yes, I will not be doing this ever again, and hopefully you guys will never have to see me.
Hey, we all have those life learning experiences, you know, along the way. So
I do really apologize. This is not like me at all, and I'm sorry.
All right.
And Chris Daly, just to mention, looking at our standard guidelines pertaining to this particular occurrence, this would fall under the category of simply issuing a non-disciplinary letter of concern and approval of the license reinstatement.
Okay.
Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to issue the letter of concern, a non-disciplinary action.
And approval of the license.
Yes, sorry. And approve the license.
I'll second that motion.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the reinstatement license and issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern. All in favor?
Chris Daly.
Aye.
Charlene Marbs.
Aye.
Barbara Paulson.
Aye.
Clint McAllister.
Aye.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stone. Do you have any questions for us?
I guess, is there any other information that I need to do before I can work again?
Mr. Chair, I can answer that.
I thought you would.
Since the board has approved your license, I will get it issued and email you a copy, and the original will follow in the mail.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you for being
here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next item of business, agenda item 8, applications for licensure approved by the executive director. I move that we ratify the 211 initial renewal and reinstatement applications that have been approved by the executive director.
I'll second the motion. Quentin McAllister.
It has been moved and seconded that we ratify the 211 initial renewal and reinstatement applications that have been approved by the executive director. All in favor?
Chris Daly.
Aye.
Charlie Marbs.
Aye.
Barbara Paulson.
Aye.
Quint McAllister.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next item of business, agenda item 9. Review, consideration, and possible action, board business and reports, 9A, Ms. Ganatra. No, 9A, Mr. Daly. 9A1, updates on the OT licensure compact.
Yeah.
Not a ton to update thus far. There are some updates to the otcompact.org website found under the toolkit section. There is a new PDF link that will take you to a handout entitled Compact Handout April 2023, which provides a bit of information on the updated states now participating in the compact, as well as benefits to the compact. There is currently a letter being drafted to send out to all of the state compact boards with a review of the current state of affairs with the compact, but that new update does state that it's anticipated to go into effect about mid-2024 is the latest update. So more to follow, but it's going through the processes. Any questions regarding the OT compact?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Hearing no questions, our next item of business is 9B, Executive Director's Report, Ms. Ganatra.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. 9B1, Financial Review. So I'd like to direct board members to the cash flow report. No large or unexpected expenses were made in March of 2023. And they are now placing the potential expenses in blue, so it will show what potentially will be spent in upcoming months, which I noticed can be quite higher than actually is what's being expended. So just a heads up on that. Any questions?
No.
Nope.
I'll go to 9B2, which is review of recent board staff activities. We continue to work a hybrid work model, and our board continues to receive an increased amount of applications each month. We are also participating in monthly Thentia meetings still, and I don't have a finalized date for the Thentia migration. We're working on that internally. It has been delayed. We don't have a finalized date, but we are actively working with Thentia and ADOA Asset to come up with a more realistic date for the migration. Any questions? Okay. And then a 9B3, which is statistics, we have 4,601 current licensees. Yep, increasing.
And Ms. Ganatra, would you also like to take on the next item of business?
I would, thank you, Mr. Daly. So 10A, so 10, open discussion on occupational therapy statutes and rules, a recommendation by subcommittee. We had an open public meeting. They're all open public, but we did invite all licensees to attend, and we had a good turnout. We, as a subcommittee, asked for feedback and suggestions and to review statutes and rules during that meeting, of which we've compiled and will address during future meetings. Our next meeting is scheduled for next Friday. I believe that is the 21st, so Friday, April 21st at 2 p.m., and I will post the agenda today and get out those invites as well. Any questions?
I actually had it on my list to ask when the next one was.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
And just one quick question. In terms of once we have that next meeting and we're getting closer to drafting the revisions, What does that process look like? Do we actually draft each one during that open meeting, or is that an activity that takes place outside of there?
That is a great question. I was going to say, Mr. Harris, if you don't mind.
I think I only partially heard the question. I'm sorry, Mr. Daly.
Oh, sure. In terms of drafting up the revisions of the rules, is that something that we actually draft during those meetings, or is that activity performed outside of those meetings?
Well, I think, you know, some agencies, I don't know fiscally where the agency stands. Sometimes agencies will engage the professional services of a rule writer to assist. You know, and what I'm talking about now are with respect to the rules. You know, if there's changes to the laws, that's different. That would probably fall under Shana. There's a number of different ways you could do the rules. If we're not in a position to use the assistance of a professional writer, then, you know, you could designate one or two individuals to do it outside of a committee meeting, but then to present it at a committee meeting for public discussion, revisions, edits, comments, and things of that nature.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Sure.
All right. Anything else regarding the rules? Moving on to agenda item 11. Any agenda items for the next meeting? Hearing no agenda items for the next meeting.
Wait. Do we need to put to discuss the movement of the, what is it, June meeting date, or did we finalize that today?
Thank you, Ms. Marbs. Do we need to add that as a, well,
we said the second, but I don't know if we need to do anything more formal to make sure that date works.
Mr. Harris, are we allowed as staff or Ms. Ganatra as executive director to send an email to see, because Ms. Ganatra, would we have to check our calendar for AT board meetings and other meetings yourself? I'm just looking out as your assistant, your calendar to see if, you know, that date would work for you as well. But are we, Mr. Harris, allowed to send an email to the board members asking what date?
Yes, you are. As long as the board members don't reply all, it only reply to the sender. And then you can gather the information and then send another email of, you know, what it, you know, the date of the meeting to everybody.
And as well.
So you want to send the email. So Shana would send the email to Vicky and then BCCS all. That way we can't reply all.
Yeah,
most effective way.
Yeah, that is how we email now as well.
Yeah.
I'm just asking if we were allowed to do that so that we can get a date, you know, sooner than later and get it set up.
And then after that, board staff could change the date on the website then?
Yes, great call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Hey.
Agenda item 12, call to the public. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak?
I do see a number, but I'm not sure.
Hearing no calls out from the public. I move that we adjourn the meeting for today.